feel alive, let's hit the dance floor. Don't work too hard, my break a backbone. Return of the Mac, the king is back though. Corvette and cash, I never lack those. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all got the semi-fold weight. Don't step out the line like this a probate. You hit the line and tried to locate. This for the time, got time for no day. War.
Welcome to another season of the Chronos Podcast. It is good to be back talking all things travel, sports, hospitality, media. I'm joined today by a very longtime friend, somebody that I grew up with, my brother grew up with, and has, to me, a job in one of the coolest industries right now in what I'm calling the arms race of the collegiate and pro sports facilities game. I'm joined by my good friend, Austin Everson with Holman Lockers. Austin, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Look forward to it.
So before we get into Holman and the space itself, give us a little background on you and how you got to Holman.
Yeah, a little winding road, but again, grew up, you know, back in Brentwood, Tennessee, and really kind of started my journey in athletics from there. Was recruited and played in college, went to Ohio University, was able to play collegiate football there, and kind of had a itch to stay in the space, and was able, luckily enough, to get my first job after grad school at the University of Nebraska. At the time, they hired a new coach, got in with a new staff, and was kind of able to kind of cut your teeth in a big-time college football program, one of the blue bloods, and learned a lot, interned, going from not getting paid to getting a real job, and kind of learned a lot and see what a big-time program is about. Had some success, but ultimately, when Coach Pelini got let go, the whole staff got let go, and I kind of really see in the inner workings of college athletics from there. Was lucky enough to get on with the Titans after that, believe it or not. So I was with the Titans for a couple of years doing team travel. So traveling to every away facility ahead of the team, seeing locker rooms, seeing facilities, and being able to see it on the pro side and just understanding the differences of collegiate and pro. And then my last few years in athletics, I was at Vanderbilt University doing scouting and evaluating right at the uptick when the transfer portal was coming around. We were playing SEC football, had a few successful years, but again, COVID year hit. We were 0-9 in SEC football and the whole staff got let go. And so I kind of said, hey, I think it's time to maybe pivot. And do something different, and an opportunity here in Dallas and Holman presented itself, and kind of doing some research on Holman and I guess what the locker industry is, and to your point, what's kind of coming down the road in college athletics, professional athletics. It was a really cool opportunity. Kind of dove in head first, and I've been here about 4 years in athletic sales, so selling into collegiate, professional, high school, any type of athletic locker on the market. That's what we do, and that's our day in, day out. We do manufacture everything here and have a backstory, but that's kind of how I got here and kind of the journey to get here.
So you got to see the locker space from not only as a player on the staff, but also college, pro, but you know, big Nebraska is one of the biggest schools, Vandy a little bit on the smaller side. So you got to really see everything. Before we get into the details, just for you now, how is it looking back at what you had compared to what you're seeing right now?
Yeah, well, honestly, you think about what you grew up with in high school, and you get metal lockers. They're either blue or they're green or they're black, but they're metal lockers, and you store your stuff. It smells. It's going to rust a little bit, but that's what you get. And then, you know, then you think about, okay, your next transition, you just see wood lockers, right? And they're just wooden lockers that you put your shoulder pad, you put your helmet in, and what you, that's all you have. And then you kind of, when you bounce around, you start to see some cool locker rooms, and you get to I guess see what could be, and that's when I got introduced, at least from even traveling the country, going to away games with the Titans, going to away games with Nebraska and Vanderbilt, seeing the SEC, Big Ten, and really seeing what's out there, and then realizing maybe what you do or don't have when it's in your own space. But as everybody knows, lockers can be anywhere from the most basic level up to now, you know, you're seeing recliners and everything else in the space.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. We all remembered when in Oregon, you know, would debut their new facilities, and it was crazy. You had Cowboys, a couple of these teams where you would see it, and they'd be really anomalies in that, hey, that was a huge level investment. But it seems like now, especially over the last few years, I don't know how much of it is NIL, transfer portal, there's a lot of pressure on people. Talk to us a little bit about what seems to have changed, even just over the 4 years that you've been with Holman, in terms of what used to be a one-off into what's now more pretty consistently a requirement.
Yeah, I do think, specifically maybe in the collegiate space, right? I do think there's a lot of benchmarking of what are my peers doing, right? Who's, okay, when Alabama had that crazy run with Nick Saban, what do they have for their lockers, right? And there's a lot of benchmarking. And Holman did the Alabama football lockers, and it was the first of its kind, reclining anti-gravity chair, beautiful solid surface. They had a practice facility locker and a game day locker. So they had two sets of lockers. And so that was a one of its kind. And I think from there, we've started to see maybe this uptick of, hey, athletes spend so much time in this space. And the locker room is truly, if you think on a college campus, your dorm room and the locker room are the only two places that's actually yours, that you can go shut off from the world, and that's your private space. And so because they spend so much time there, we saw, hey, let's put a recliner. Let's let them recover a little bit. Let's let them relax. Let's let them turn off the lights in their lockers if they want to, you know, be able to take a nap. And so I think there is a lot of benchmarking, and there was a huge rise that we've seen of, okay, what's Alabama doing? You know, what's Georgia doing, right? Whoever's at the peak. And you've seen in anything, there's a little copycat and benchmarking when you see what someone great has, and let's go do that. And I think that's where the wheels start spinning pretty fast in college athletics of what's the spend going to be, how much money, and where can I get it? That has happened pretty recently here.
Now things are becoming more of a benchmark, but there's still a lot of customization involved. That's got to be tough on you guys, which is, you know, how do you juggle that customization versus being able to execute the right way? How do you guys juggle that with the decision makers on the team side?
Yeah, I think so. Holman Lockers, we are a custom shop. Like if you come up with an idea and we have enough time, like we can execute that, right? I think that's a really cool thing. We're this think tank and this Formula One team that if you want to do it and you want to really supercharge your locker, let's do it if we have enough time to manufacture this thing. To your point, I had a call, you know, University of Tennessee, we're doing their lockers. We're going to install this summer. And I had the architect and the design team say, what is something you've never done? Like, what's next in lockers? And I was like, I don't know. Like, you tell me, what's the craziest idea you've ever heard, Austin? And I don't know that answer. You know, that's something that I think is really on kind of that cutting edge of what can you really come up with? What can you integrate into a locker and into that locker room that we can do it? I have confidence of the manufacturing side, but to your point, it's what's that kind of that cutting edge of going too far in locker design and really trying to do something crazy that you can't execute on. Another anecdote, I think if you would Google like the Houston Rockets lockers, incredible design, but they want it to look like a rocket ship, you know? And from a manufacturing company, it's big and it's scary and it's really cool on pen and paper and renderings. And then when you see the finished photos, it looks identical. But to get to that point, it takes a lot of work and a lot of engineering and R&D to get there. But it's really unbelievable what you can really do with lockers.
How different is it for you guys doing a Houston Rockets smaller scale, you know, 15 guys on the team plus, you know, some two-way spots or whatever versus, you know, you guys did SMU, the new Gary Weber end zone complex. You got 100 plus people. It's a pretty big space. Like, how different is it for you guys? How do you approach that from the smaller to the bigger? Or because you're custom, it's pretty similar process?
You know, oftentimes we'll build a mock-up. You know, you'll build one and make sure you can get it exactly right and get what the customer wants. And you're going to test that with the athletes. You're going to test that with the design team, the equipment staff, and make sure it's exactly the way that you want. But it's the repeatability, right? 18 to us, you know, 18 versus 120. As long as you get one right and you have everything nailed, the repeatability can be pretty consistent across the board. But there comes into, I think what a lot of people don't realize is the amount of sheer raw goods and material you may have to order for a quantity of 120. And just the undertaking and warehouse space and manufacturing capability, that's where a basketball job being the roster of 18 versus a football job at 120 is quite the larger dynamic and task to take on.
These are massive expenses on the locker. You know, there's a budget. And how do you see your customers going through that process, weighing, you know, you got lockers, but then you got training, you've got hot tubs, cold tubs, you got all this other stuff that has to go on in these facilities versus what, you know, ultimately is a little more on the vanity side. It's like, how are you guys seeing that approach to budgeting the locker specifically versus, you know, some of the other important pieces? Because the lockers are kind of the showpiece.
Sure.
Right? That's what you usually see in the reveal.
Yeah. And it's funny because so lockers, to back to our, I think what we try to sell, what we say and what you would understand is I think lockers are the most visible and it's where it's one of the highest athlete touch points, right? This thing they're using the most within the space. There is certainly, you know, you mentioned some of the training facility, like the rehab space, the strength and conditioning space that they do touch on a quite regular basis. But the locker spend is something that's theirs, and it's their one space that is the athletes. And so there is an emphasis on the locker design, and really, especially at the high end level, the high custom design build style projects, of thinking through every placement of every hook and the powder coating, the specific Pantone of a gold, and really how do we ventilate this locker in a way that's going to, you know, exhaust the entire room. And some of those minute details aren't spared on some of the projects because what they're spending on, frankly, on athletes anymore anyway, I think the locker has to be exactly right to the specification of that program.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about innovation. I think most people still have that feeling of a locker's a locker. And then as you see these videos, even still, they look cool, but really we don't know what's going on underneath. Talk to us a little bit about some of the new innovation that's come into play, whether it be, I don't know, is there like UV sanitation? Is there stuff that helps with anyone that's been in a football locker room knows anything that you can do to help ventilate is good. So talk a little bit about, you know, some of those new innovations that have come into play.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing we're tasked with is you walk into a locker room and I just don't want this to smell like a locker room, right? Like the way we grew up in high school, you don't want it to smell. And so we, you know, from a coordination side, you tie into the mechanical in the room and you're exhausting the entire room through lockers. And how do we come up with a way that that lockers are ventilated out the room? There's active drying fans to dry into your boots, into your cleats, specifically shoulder pads, spider pads that can get pretty nasty, knee braces. How do we dry those things? How do we ventilate those things? But also, how do we disinfect those? So using UV lighting that is, you know, antimicrobial and can actually, you know, the bacteria and control some of those items. So those are certainly things that we've done. I think, you know, some of the cutting edge, I just think of technology alone of where AV components in the digital age and because, frankly, because rosters turn over so much so fast, I don't want to order a nameplate from Fast Signs down the road. Like, I want to be able to change this. Or Johnny Recruit is coming in with his parents and he's the top kid in the country or the top transfer in the country. Let's create the nameplate in some digital and maybe put his highlights, you know, on that screen the moment he walks in the locker room. And so being able to get digital content to lockers, the ability to dry lockers, to disinfect lockers, while still allowing a comfortable place to store all your pads. So you're essentially designing a 5-in-1 that can check all those boxes within a 4-foot space at the end of the day.
It's incredible to think. I mean, even we're here, for those of you that are listening, pop over to YouTube or the Market Scale page. You can see the LED backdrop that we have here. It's incredible that kind of stuff even exists. And you guys are able to put it on lockers, like you said, be able to put highlights in. Nowadays with transfer portal, a guy shows up that might have transferred there in the winter portal and then he's out by spring. So being able to change that over seems really important. What are some of the more unique requests that you guys have gotten?
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point, the point blank question of what's the coolest thing that you've never done that you want to do, right? And I think, I mean, even if you look I think a lot of metal components and powder coating components and actually just meeting specific require, like branding, I think is very customization. I think even, you know, talk about heating and cooling on seats. When you talk about anything for athlete welfare, we get asked a lot of let's push the envelope questions when it comes to athlete welfare. And I think we'll do everything in our power to our point. If we have the time to test it and make sure it's not going to fail, because we, at the end of the day, we're a manufacturing company. We don't want to put a product in your space that's going to fail, but we got to have ample time to do that. And I think that's where the R&D piece comes in. And oftentimes in the design build projects, you will have that time and that runway to be able to capture all those requests. But, you know, you couldn't imagine some of the requests that we get that we just sometimes have to say, no, that's not attainable at this time. But we're always trying to push the envelope.
Are you guys doing R&D work on the side, just kind of concurrently with projects, always to see what's possible?
Yeah, we do have an R&D team at Holman that is constantly working on and really testing things or prototyping. You know, we're using, you know, that Tennessee football project. We're using hardware that we've never used. We're using a cool way to store things that we've never used. Now, is that just testing hardware? Is that getting them to the exact specifications of the orange and their Pantone and the checkered board on the end zone and making it look cool? But on our end, we also have to test it. And that comes into R&D. And that's certainly not my role on the front end. I can tell them we can do it. And then it's kind of our team to make it happen.
Yeah. How do coaches look at this? Because at the end of the day, you ask most coaches and they want to have, you know, on the football side, smash mouth, hard nose, tough, physical teams. How do they approach what's become pretty cushy environments in the lockers, all that that goes with? Obviously, they want to take care of the athletes. Do you ever have those conversations with coaches saying, like, this is getting a little ridiculous?
Yeah. You know, so I think it depends on which way the pendulum swings maybe at that program, right? For instance, like the Naval Academy, no cushions, no locks, no lights. Our athletes don't have that, right? There's an honor code, so there's no locks on lockers. They don't want cushions, right? They don't want them spending a lot of time in there. So it's more of a Spartan locker, right? It's just the basics, what you need. But then you go and you look at Michigan football, for example. One of the most incredible design lockers from Coach Harbaugh originally had his hands. And then through the transition, there was a lot of fingerprints and a lot of touch points that they had. The coaching staff had every aspect of that locker was detailed out to a fine degree because they wanted their athletes to have the best of the best. And at the time, they were upcoming. They won the national championship, and they have potentially the best locker in the country. So you get both ends of the spectrum where coaches are very hands-on and want every influence on that locker, to some that say, hey, the athletes just need to store their gear. I want them to focus their attention on the field or focus their attention on the court. And so you kind of just got to play to the program and the culture of that program.
Yeah. You mentioned at the beginning a lot of the turnover that happened. You just mentioned an example, but how does that wind up going where you start a project? Because these are, first of all, what's the average timeline for a college football locker?
Yeah.
Start to finish on that.
The really high end, the design builds could be an 18 month project, 18 to 2 years. If you really are going to do a design build from the ground up, let's design it, let's test it, let's prototype it, and before we install it, that's 18 to 12 to 24 months. You can turn around a locker room in 6 to 8 months if you had to. But at the long end, and what we see on those really high end custom jobs is that long.
So you could see whether it be, you know, somebody like a Harbaugh where they choose to go somewhere else, but you get coaches, new coaches that are going to come in, maybe new ADs, maybe, you know, you're going to have another donor come in that says, hey, I want this. How do you guys juggle that over the course of such a long project?
You're flexible, right? You got to be flexible. I think, and to your point, University of Nebraska, just as another anecdote, they had a huge walk-on program, right? And always have traditionally a walk-on program. Coach Frost was there. They had 175 lockers in the varsity and a little JV locker room that they were going to transition. And that was kind of how when he came through the program under Tom Osborne, they had, this is how it was set up. Well, halfway through the project on our end, there was a coaching change. And there were the heads got together and they said, that's not a great idea. We want one locker room. We don't need 175. And so we're in the middle of designing and fabricating and purchasing material. And we have to pivot and say, actually, we only need 145 of these. They're all going to be the same. There's no difference in the varsity and the JV. And you kind of got to be flexible because at the end of the day, coaches do come and go. And if you talk to the equipment managers or you talk to the facilities guys that have been there forever, they'll tell you, hey, let's future-proof this locker because let's be real. Coaches turn over just as much as players do anymore. And they don't want to design around one person's may not be the end user. And so you got to kind of be flexible and quick on your toes to pivot when you have to.
For people that aren't in the business or in, obviously it's a really niche business. A lot of people don't know Holman. If you are in that business and have touched it at all, you obviously do know Holman. You guys are huge in the space. And I would assume that a lot of people will, because of all those potential hiccups that happen, they want to go to somebody like you that you guys have done it. You guys have seen just about everything. How do you guys get there, though? You know, tell us a little bit, for those that don't know much about Holman, tell a little bit about that story, how you get to be doing, you know, some of these names, Tennessee, Nebraska, SMU, Texas Tech.
Yeah, I think the long story short, Holman's been around for 49 years, right? So Travis Holman's our owner. His father, Joe Holman, started the company doing racquetball courts. So the hardwood on racquetball courts and then got into doing lockers, more country club style lockers. And then Travis, you know, takes control of the company and athletics starts to be a small one-off here and there of let's take the same country club style wood lockers and maybe make them bigger and put a cushion and logo and let's make a football locker. But really this thing started to take off probably, you know, in the 20 teens, right? 2015, 2016. Athletic lockers, to your point, started this arms race and the spending at the time and the dollars that were coming in. And so Holman was somewhat ill-equipped to start selling and so started building out the athletic space. And really, I think some marquee locker rooms that got built during those times were kind of formative of Holman of learning what can work and what cannot work and what materials are good in what locations and other materials aren't and really starting to flush out and having that expertise of we're a locker expert. We can design you anything you want, but here's what's been tested in the field. And so there were some hard lessons, I think, early on of what works in athletic lockers. And frankly, they're going to be banged up pretty hard, right? Like guys are going to get mad and throw helmets and you're going to break things off lockers. It happens. But how can we limit some of those durability concerns over the time? And so I think where this thing really took off is in the last 5 to 7 years that, to your point earlier, you know, the Oregon gets released or the LSU locker gets released or the Houston Texans gets released and it catches eyes and you see those reveals and everybody's talking about it. And then there's a lot of people that as revenue is growing in college athletics, there's frankly either donors or people in the athletic department saying, I want that. Right. And pointing to a specific project. And we were positioned really well because we had done a lot of those and had the experience. And frankly, had the bandwidth to be able to do that. As Holman has 350,000 square feet of just manufacturing. And so we're pretty equipped to do large scale projects. And so I think it is a very niche market that we're in. But being the leader in that, people do come to you for some expertise and guidance along the way.
We've talked about innovation, technology changing. There's always something new coming around the pipe. But on projects that are this size, the last thing I'm sure that your customers want is to spend all this money and then boom, something new happens or something new comes, you know, 2 years later. And then all of a sudden your product is almost not necessarily obsolete, but it's falling behind. How do you guys juggle those conversations with maybe someone wants to go, you know, fast and furious towards this one direction, but you guys, you know, you have to say, hey, you know, we think something else might be coming on here. Let's back off on that. Or like that kind of change that potentially can happen.
That's hard. I mean, you certainly try to future-proof the locker as much as humanly possible, but it's like buying a car model, right? There's always a new one coming out, and there's always going to be a better one coming out down the road. But we can do, if we, given the time and the budget, like we can throw everything in the locker that we can humanly do right now, but certainly in 12 months, there may be something newer on the market, something bigger, something a little more fancier, something with a larger chair or more features, because I think that's people are stretching and pushing the market the way it goes. But I do think, hey, you want to stick to your guns, and we're never going to sell you a locker that's going to fail in the field. Let's start with there. But I think design wise, let's future proof this as much as possible, and make it where no matter what, in 3 to 5 years, whoever's using that space and the coach or the athletes, that's still going to be a state of the art locker.
How do you guys handle the supply chain side? Got a long runway, but it's not, it's not a custom built house where, yeah, you can move in whenever it's ready. You guys have a very specific time frame that you have to work in. Usually, you got to be in for that season. How do you guys juggle that? And is it different going into a new space than it would be retrofitting an existing space?
Yeah, I think, and just, to take a step back, like, I knew nothing about manufacturing before working at Holman, and I've learned a tremendous amount about manufacturing and lead times and materials. And I think that's really what makes it every project slightly different, because you're going to use a different set of materials from a different vendor. From it could be sourced globally, it could be here in Dallas, Fort Worth. So trying to figure that out and project a date is something that is always tricky in manufacturing, right? It's construction, things happen along the way. And typically in a long scale project, we're always one of the last things in the space, right? If you're building out Weber End Zone here in Dallas, you're doing the concrete, you're doing the walls, you're doing everything, the electrical, the mechanical. And by the time their athletes are about ready to move in, you're getting lockers installed at the tail end of a project. So we do oftentimes have a good runway, but certainly there's things that are unforeseen in the market, right? Vendors, they're out of stock, or they're back ordered on a specific hinge, or there's a holiday in Italy, right? And the one manufacturer that makes this hardware, they shut down for a month in the summer. That's just what they do in their culture. And so there's things that you can't foresee. But we have the experience, and we try to at least forecast when that's going to hit. But there's also, to your point, there's two types. There's a replacement, right? Let's pull out old lockers and put in new lockers. And I think even on a small scale, whether that's a high school, a small Olympic sport in a college, in a D2, D3 level, or Division I, let's pull out old lockers and replace with new. That's a pretty easy project, shorter time span. We can kind of keep the scope of work smaller. Versus you look at a brand new facility, right? Texas Tech End Zone, or SMU End Zone, or the Bolt in LA, like the LA Chargers new practice facility. Those are massive projects, and we're such a small scope in that. We typically have time, and we always come in later in that. But at that point, you can get into the design and the build and really flush out a lot of the details versus just replacing in the existing footprint. And so I think those are the fun ones of how can we really be creative? How can we push the limits? Because we have this long time duration. We also have a massive footprint of a new building, and the square footage is there. And let's really push the envelope on those type of projects instead of just replacing what's there.
Yeah. What are some things that, either something about this space that you didn't know when you got in, but you found really cool?
I think, honestly, just the details of materials on it, like, as weird as that sounds, but, is that a wood locker? Is that made of phenolic? Is that solid surface? And the machining, I think my brain doesn't always work like that. Like, I don't know how you would ever machine anything, or how, I don't come from a mechanical background by any means. So I think I was intrigued just to learn so much and how much, honestly, human impact has on every locker. Our office, we have 70 people in the office, but we may have 220 on the shop floor at any time building lockers. And those are people that make the world turn, right? And just to think that, like, there's so much human touch points on those crazy cool lockers. When you look at the Dallas Mavericks, or you look at the Texas Rangers down the road, someone literally had to screw those together, fasten those together, put the drawer glides in place. We had to run it through the veneer staining line. And those are so many human touch points along the way that, one, there are places that can go right or go wrong at any point, and there is human error involved. But to see how talented those people are and how much pride they take in their work, like, it's fascinating when you see the reveal videos and how many people have touched those along the way, kind of makes it pretty rewarding at the end.
Yeah, I think most people probably just assume, like a lot of things nowadays, it's just slapped together.
Yeah.
you know, right. seems maybe just thrown into play. But what you're saying is most of these that you guys are doing are truly, it's hand craftsmanship.
Correct.
I assume that Italy example was a real thing that happened.
It was, absolutely.
Which is really cool. What is something about Holman, you know, specifically that you guys are particularly proud of?
Yeah, I think that. I mean, I think what I kind of, what I alluded to earlier of, it's a family-owned company that has grown kind of organically. And there's been people that have been around 30, 40 years at the company and really kind of seen it rise. But there's a lot of talented people that take pride in that work of seeing the lockers from we getting raw sheets of material, hitting the saws, hitting the machines, and then getting them built and out the door. I think that's something that's pretty unique of, hey, we're in athletics and we're a highly visible part of the company. There's cool reveal videos online all the time. You know, teams walking in their new locker room and getting to see that. And just, I guess, across our company, people take a lot of pride in doing a good job and you know, having the end customer be happy with what they order, what they get, and us delivering on that. But it's a family-owned company that, you know, I think has had some success, and it's been a great culture of a company.
Definitely seems like it comes across in quality of the work and the fact that you guys continue to get called in for these huge jobs. Is there a job that, I'm going to ask, two parts of this. One, is there a job that the company is particularly proud of, you know, of, not that they have any favorites necessarily, but is there one that either, hey, we overcame some crazy obstacle here, or we really pushed the limits here? Is there a project like that that's talked about in the hallways of, you know, man, I can't believe we pulled that off?
I think to go back, if you Googled maybe the Houston Rockets locker room, I think it was a love-hate relationship with the project. Turned out incredible. And again, designed as a rocket ship, designed with an architect, designed a circular pod for each athlete, a glorified closet, but it's built in a circle with within the room, some custom red piping that goes 30 feet in the air, glass doors on the locker storage. And so, yes, absolutely. Can we do that? And absolutely. Are we proud that we can say like we manufactured that locker? Now, was there pain along the way? Absolutely. Yeah. I think, anything you're going to push the limits, you got to test and learn how it is. But I think the ones that are also kind of homegrown hit a little close to heart, right? I think the brand new Texas Tech, the SMU here in town, men's, women's basketball. I even think of the Texas Rangers, new Globe Life Field, right? You get a premium building that's brand new, and to be able to say, yeah, we're part of that in our community. Those are the ones that you're pretty proud of.
It's a great story. It's one of those. Like I said, it's a niche thing that is really cool when you start to dive into it and realize everything else that goes along with it. For you, is there a specific project that was your favorite other than SMU? Because as a Mustang, I'm going to assume that's it. But anything else from your time there, either something that you did, maybe it was a first, maybe it was something that you really stretched. But personally, is there a project that really sticks out that you did?
Yeah, I think kind of my background working at the University of Nebraska all those years and then being able to do a brand new, you know, end zone expansion and do those lockers was pretty neat. I do think being from Nashville and the new Nissan Stadium will be a project that Holman's about to do those brand new lockers, and that one to hit pretty close to home as well. You know, anything along those lines where you have that connection or you even know somebody that works at that school, right? And you want to deliver on, hey, I've had this relationship for so long. I want to deliver on that and provide you the best of the best. And I think those are the ones, you know, those are the ones that come to mind, but those are the ones I particularly enjoy of having some of those connections from your past life in that space.
Yeah. And you just brought up something that I wanted to circle back to. I know you guys obviously, the attention's on the huge projects, but at the same time, you guys are doing, you know, middle school, high school locker rooms as well. And that a lot of times, go back to Brentwood High back in the day, we had the metal lockers. We were the first ones that had the wood lockers, and it was the coolest thing in the world. So you guys probably, I would guess you guys probably get even more satisfaction in a way over some of those versus the bigger ones that get a lot of the headlines.
Yeah, you know, I do think, there's, you know, we have an arm of our company called Holman Helps, and we're actually able to do, and it's kind of specific to athletics, but we're able to donate a locker room back to whether it's when a hurricane comes through the Gulf Coast or up in Flint, Michigan, you know, Beecher High School, and they had some issues going on in Flint. I think some of those projects are like, man, yes, it's all about the bottom line. And yes, we want the revenue and we want to grow as a company, but also like we're able to do some cool stuff for people that lockers are an easy thing for us to do, but makes such a difference at a high school level, at a program that can't afford that or do that. And those are specifically in Holman Athletics. And I think just being able to see that on the back end and kind of get those letters from the end user or the AD or the coach, those things are pretty rewarding for sure.
One thing that I wanted to circle back to at the beginning in your intro, because you don't want to say it, I'll say it for you. Only state championship winning quarterback in Brentwood High history. Put yourself in those shoes, you know, back in early 2000s. What would you have done if you knew, like, what would you think if somebody told you that these lockers would exist,
right,
and these locker rooms would exist in the form that they do today?
You know, obviously that kid wouldn't have believed it, right? Because, I mean, I think even just having a locker was a big deal, one. Yeah. And then, you know, you go to college, you see your name on your locker, and that's a big deal. And then, but I just think it's come so far. But, you know, you bring up where my mind went a little bit also is what's changed in maybe college athletics, too, of kind of the athletes and maybe transition to that conversation, I think, because where – anymore with you're able to pay these athletes, right? And you're able to compensate the athletes for rightfully so their skill and their talent. And I think there's a weird balance in college athletics of I have a pool of money and I have a bucket of dollars. Am I spending that on capital projects or am I spending that in free agency, right? And college free agency is what it is. And I think that's been a challenging thing for a school to decide on what's more valuable for my dollars. Am I spending money to keep my athletes happy and invest in them, or am I actually spending my dollars to go procure and get and retain and pay my athletes? So that's kind of this tricky balance that's kind of hanging in the air right now. Honestly,
have you guys seen a shift or any pullback or anything since revenue sharing really came to the forefront?
Even timely, like on Monday, the house decision was supposed to come out. They delayed it, but you know, each school is going to be able to direct pay their athletes. It's up to $20 million a year, and that's the cap, and so they're going to cap it, and it's going to come direct from the school. But it got pushed back. But we've certainly seen I've had a specific school that was in line to do lockers. Holman completed the lockers in 2012. So they're due, right? These are old lockers and they need to be done. And it's a Division I football program. But they said, hey, like, we have a pool of money, but our quarterback is a senior and we're gonna have to pay him $1 million to keep him around his senior year because he can transfer for free. He can go get paid that on the open market. And so they literally used the money earmarked for lockers to keep their quarterback around and had a successful year, and more power to you. And that's great. But yeah, I mean, that's a crazy thing in our industry of where are those dollars being spent? Who's making those decisions? Is it the facility staff? Is it the equipment manager? Is it the head coach? Or is it the chief revenue officer at the university, right? It's an interesting time until maybe they flush out that decision of who's making decisions on the spend. And yes, capital projects are still on the table in the industry, whether that's at any level, they're still going to have to renovate. But until they figure out the payment side of this, I think it's kind of up in the air.
It's a big curveball to throw in on something that, you know, usually is a little more stable
for sure
than what you have. Well, thank you for coming in and sitting down and talking about this. It's something that I've been interested in for a while. I don't know why, but I love it. And it's a really cool thing. And I hope a lot of people were able to learn a little bit more behind the curtain on some of these things so that when they see these videos, they have a little more insight to it. So,
yep.
Thank you for your time. Hope you come back.
This has been great. Thanks for having me.